Let's start with where footy left off last night. At the debate around the rules, sometimes I think it's perverse. Was there almost a sense of disappointment that the AFL didn't change anything yesterday? This is Brad Scott's portfolio now. Oh, it's my favourite portfolio in footy. Hello, Brad. Welcome.
Thanks, Jared. Appreciate your time.
You didn't disappoint people yesterday by not changing the rules, did you?
Well, I think there's been a lot of change, hasn't there, over the last 2 years? And it's not just changing the rules in footy. It's, you know, footy is, particularly in Victoria, is not as we know it. And that's not just the elite level. That's community footy has just been decimated over the last 2 years. So, you know, we really feel that everyone's craving getting footy back to what we know and love. And, you know, I think it's really important that we consolidate the changes that have occurred over the last couple of years and try and get footy back to what people remember from 2019 and before.
Just out of curiosity, are there any active proposals for rule changes in front of the committee at the moment?
Not rule changes as such, but we did talk about some interpretations, and that's probably just bringing the umpire interpretations back to the way the rules were originally written. So as an example of that, a really simple one, which is time wasting, which seems like a pretty sort of frivolous thing to talk about. But when we're trying to get free-flowing footy and we want to get teams to move the ball on quickly, you know, any coach will tell you that when they don't have the ball, the first weapon in defence is to delay the opposition playing the ball on. So, you know, we want to tighten that up, and we showed the committee some examples yesterday of 2021 time delay tactics that won't be tolerated in 2022. So that's not a rule change, but that's just tightening up an existing rule and making sure everyone's aware of it.
Just give us a snapshot of what that looks like, Brad. What sort of clips are you showing?
Well, I think anyone, if you think about the way footy's played, if there's for example, a free kick paid for holding the ball at a stoppage and players are milling around the ball, quite often the player will, who's had the free kick paid against him, will just sit over the top of the ball and not let the opposition player get access to the ball. So, you know, we just won't tolerate that next year. It'll just be, you know, if the player impedes the opposition player who's won the free kick, it'll be a 50-metre penalty. So, you know, that's something that's just slipped over the last couple of years.
It's a crackdown on the B-grade acting. Sometimes I think players are drawn to sort of the B-grade. Oh, what's going on here? We'll just hold the ball up for a little bit.
Well, I mean, we see it in other sports too, particularly the rugby codes, where, you know, the delaying the playing of the ball is a coaching tactic. And, you know, all clubs, you know, talk about it. All clubs do it. And it's probably time that we caught up with it and that the umpires were stricter on it, because it probably feeds into the umpire respect piece too, which we're talking a lot about, you know, players getting the ball back to the umpire rather than, you know, kicking the ball away. So those sort of things have crept into the game the last couple of years, and we're pretty keen to sharpen that up.
Is the riddle of holding the ball in your thinking, Brad?
Well, it's been a standing agenda item on every meeting I've been a part of for the last 20 years, Jared,
yes.
Where it relates to coaches and the AFL. And the real challenge with holding the ball is there are polar opposite views from, you know, coaches, clubs, players, fans. And, you know, we're looking really closely at how the rule is written, and the challenge for umpires is how do they define prior opportunity, and also how do they define, you know, when the player's had prior opportunity and is tackled, you know, to the letter of the law, they have to immediately dispose of the ball by hand or foot. Now, the definition of what's immediately, how long do we give players before they kick or handball the ball? So that's what's on the table at the moment. That's what was discussed with the competition committee. And Andrew Dillon and I have got the Adelaide Crows to go tomorrow, and we'll have completed all our club coach and GMs of footy consultation. So once we've completed that process, our aim is to try and give as much clarity as we can to clubs, players, umpires and fans as to how holding the ball is going to be interpreted in 2022, so that everyone knows. So our aim is to have that absolutely completed by the end of January.
Is there If you were talking to footy fans, is there a desire for simplicity in holding the ball? That's something that we can see and recognise on the outside, or is that unattainable given the complexity of the game?
Well, I don't think it's unattainable in certain situations. So one of the competition committee members gave an example of a player who, you know, might be bouncing the ball down the wing, for example, and is caught. The definition of immediate should be as soon as he's caught, it's holding the ball. There's no allowance given for disposing of the ball because he's had ample prior opportunity. I think that one's pretty simple, and all the fans can see that, and you know, we want to pay the obvious ones there. Where it's more challenging is in a stoppage where there are a lot of players around the ball. You know, we still want to reward the player who wins the ball first. So, you know, we want to encourage players to win the ball in the contest. And sometimes prior opportunity can be a fraction of a second, or it could be 5 seconds. So that's where it becomes a little bit of a challenge for the umpires. But we've had some really good feedback, and I think we'll be able to clarify that somewhat, given I suspect holding the ball will be a talking point for the next 20 years.
Yes, that's absolutely. It doesn't matter what you do, it will be a fierce talking point all the way through. Is when the conversations you've had with the 17 clubs so far and the Crows to go, is there a commonality that you hear from coaches and from GMs of footy as to what they would like out of your portfolio?
Yeah, the common theme is clarity where possible and ample notice. And I think that's absolutely fair and reasonable. I think most coaches have probably shifted over time to, sure, they'll have a view, but the most important thing for them is to have clarity as to the way the rules are going to be interpreted, and so they can train their players. And if there are going to be any changes and material changes that might impact their recruiting or, you know, the types of players they want to get on their list, then they just want as much notice as possible. And, you know, we totally agree with that. But given the last couple of years, some of the changes have happened pretty late, and we always reserve the right to make changes where, particularly where player safety is paramount. So, you know, we'll take that on board and do our best to give as much clarity and as much notice as possible. And that's why we're fairly explicit in saying that there won't be any material change in 2022, but there will be some tweaks to the way the game's been interpreted by umpires.
So I guess in what wasn't done, is the AFL happy with how the medical sub worked, given that it was the 11th hour that it was introduced for 2021?
Yeah, the feedback from particularly club doctors and the AFL's medical team was that it took the pressure off the decision makers, particularly where it relates to, you know, diagnosing concussive type incidents. And that will always be our first priority, to make sure that the right process is followed where it relates to assessing a player who's injured. Whether the Medisub is the ideal way to do that, we'll just keep monitoring it. But we certainly want a bigger sample size. We want to be able to analyse it, and we certainly don't want to make any knee-jerk changes to it and then have to change it again down the track. So under that theme, just, you know, 2022, consolidating what's already been done in the last couple of years by Steve Hocking and his team, we want a bigger sample size before we even contemplate further change.
Have you considered a nuance with the medical sub, as other sports do? Once you use your medical reserve, the other teams becomes available to use as they wish, or as I think I read in The Age, is the idea that come the last quarter, the medical sub can be used without injury?
Yeah, I think those are all things that we'll consider and take feedback on board. I don't think that particularly the Medi sub himself or in W herself enjoys sitting on the bench for the entire game, you know, in a sort of perverse way, almost hoping for an injury so they can get out on the ground. But, you know, again, we'll just keep looking at that, keep taking feedback on board, and, you know, form a position once we have a bigger sample size.
What do you think the stand rule did for the game in 2021?
I think it created options, particularly for the ball carrier, but options also for coaches to look, you know, how they were going to exploit it offensively and probably created some challenges defensively, which was a big part of the reason for the rule. We felt over a pretty steady 15-year period that defence was pretty much winning in the battle against offence. And I think the stand rule tilted the scales back in favour of offence just slightly, given, it certainly gave the ball carrier more of a 180-degree view. And, all footy fans know that most teams employ some sort of team defence these days, and the first layer of defence is the man on the mark. So reducing the effectiveness of that man on the mark gave the offensive player more options. And we're not going to draw any conclusions from, whether statistically or otherwise as to the impact of that rule until we have a bigger sample size. And that's the reason we want to keep it the same for 2022.
Was there a level of opposition from clubs to it? So it felt like there was a coordinated move from a couple against it publicly maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. What did you get a push from any clubs to have it removed?
Not really. No, we had some, as I said, we had some feedback. Some clubs, as an example, really like the rule. Others, it probably doesn't suit them in terms of the way they've played previously. But, we're in the phase at the moment, as I said, of consolidation. So, we're pretty keen just to have a look at it over time. And, there's been a lot of change and we're keen to bed those down and consolidate them.
Philosophically, Brad, in the scale of what you might do in this portfolio, are you a conservative? Are you a leave the game alone? Are you a radical thinker? Are you a revolutionary? Where would you put yourself in the scale as you develop in this role?
Well, I wouldn't put myself in any camp. I mean, my portfolio is fairly vast and it relates to things like talent pathway and the overall competition structure and a lot of strategic processes in that portfolio. But as it relates to the game, I think that, and perhaps it's because of my pedigree as a former coach, I still think coaches will have the most impact on the way the game is played. And our challenge is just to stay agile and keep watching the game and make sure our overarching goal is to make sure that the game is as compelling as it possibly can be for fans, for players, for everyone involved. So, if the game looks fantastic and we don't think there's any change required, we'll leave it alone. But the minute we see some, detrimental aspects coming into the game, we'll look to adjust. So I wouldn't pigeonhole my team into any camp on that front.
Where does scoring sit in that? So scoring's used as the tension piece. And I did note in some of what was going on with the stand rule, it was explicit at the time that the stand rule wasn't about increasing scoring, and yet it's been hung for the fact that scoring didn't increase. So there's the public debate doesn't quite stack up, I don't think, in those moments. But in the philosophy of the AFL is experiencing a historic and long-term deterioration in scoring. Does that concern you?
It's something we watch. I wouldn't say it concerns me because, I know full well that a lot of AFL coaches, want to score more. After all, the objective is to score more than your opposition. The challenge really comes after about, in my experience, about round four, where, all teams are trying to score more. But the problem is if some teams are scoring more, that's at the expense of another team who's getting scored against more. So coaches immediately go to mitigating that increase in scoring. And I think that's what, where the AFL's got to be really aware that coaches will always have the biggest say in how the game's played and whether that's a really attacking style or whether it's a really defensive style. And our role is to make sure that if the game becomes overly congested, scoring just completely dries up, then we've got to look to make change and to mandate change because we can't expect coaches to do it for us because their role is to win.
Listening to you yesterday, Brad, the work around the MRO and particularly head knocks is a work in progress at the moment. I'm interested, when you sit now, So the approach yesterday was to choose incidents, what, from 2013 and look at evolution. When you sit around a table now contemplating what is acceptable and what's not, is it a football discussion? Is it a medical discussion? Is it a legal discussion? Or does it now tie in all of those areas?
Well, it used to be a football discussion, and now the reality is that all of those parties are involved. And, you know, we need to consult the medical profession, and, you know, I think everyone knows the direction that this is going, and that we want to make our game as safe as possible, not just for the elite players that we watch on TV, but everything we do at the elite level feeds down through community level, right down to grassroots juniors. So we need to make sure that we're setting the right example and are promoting our sport as, yep, one that is a competitive contact sport, but it's as safe as it can possibly be. So those discussions now do involve other people, particularly the medical profession, in how we're going to adjudicate head high contact. And I thought it was a really helpful process to take the committee through some incidents and head high incidents in particular through 2013 and have a bit of a discussion about what we thought was acceptable as an industry 8 years ago, and is that acceptable today? And it was a unanimous no. So it just demonstrated shifting attitudes over time. And an example of that, for example, is the sliding rule. You know, players used to slide into contests all the time. We just very rarely see that anymore. And I think players adapt really quickly. And our challenge with head high is to make sure that we're as clear as we can possibly be that if you choose to bump, and the bump's still a legal part of the game, but you can't bump someone in the head. And if you do, whether it's accidental or not, there's going to be a case to answer.
Do you think, so player behaviour has moved across 8 years, or no, standards have moved. Do you need to move player behaviour over the next 8 years? Is that actually what penalties are about?
Yeah, we did have a discussion around penalties, and the Players Association have a representative on the competition committee, and they stress that when players are fined, they absolutely do see it as a penalty. But the reality is, I think clubs and probably fans see when players are fined that it's akin to getting off the charge. I think we're looking for a change in player behaviour and the best way to deter them from doing those things. And that is most likely a suspension. But you know, we want all of our players playing. So what we want is a change of behaviour, and hopefully we don't have to suspend anyone. But if we don't get the change in behaviour that we want, then perhaps we do have to be a little bit more or a little harsher at match review.
Have you got in mind what you would like the match review process to look like, or are you working through that at the moment?
No, that's a fairly big piece that we're working through, and I think the best way that we can do that is have a look at the results that we think are fair and reasonable on certain incidents, and then have a look at the way we assess them. At the moment, you know, some incidents are difficult to get into the three categories, whether it be, you know, careless or intentional, you know, high, medium, low impact, or high or low impact. So that's ongoing. Michael Christian and I will get together and talk about that. But again, what our role is to achieve as much clarity as we possibly can, so that, you know, clubs, players, coaches and fans know what the rules are and the way they're going to be interpreted before the season starts.
Do you think you can get there with fans on that front, or will reportable incidents always be divisive, and that's all you can do is achieve consistency so people understand where you're coming from rather than necessarily agree?
Well, I think consistency is relative. I think that we often compare incidents, but they're in all the database that we have of going through incidents, they're very rarely, if ever, identical. So the consistency might be a real challenge to achieve. But what we want consistency in is our attitudes. And, you know, the statement that, you know, you can choose to bump, but the minute you choose to bump, if you hit a player high, you're going to have a case to answer. I mean, I don't think we can be any clearer than that. And I think it's a process that will always have an element of ambiguity in it. And that's the real challenge. And I think there are always going to be cases throughout the year that people are going to debate. And it probably fills up a fair bit of your airtime, Jared.
It does. If you solve it, Brad, it will be hugely problematic for my portfolio of work.
Well, I don't think you've got too much to worry about. It's probably a continuum, making it as clear as we possibly can be, knowing that it's, is it ever going to be perfect? Well, I think that's the ultimate aim, but it might be insurmountable.
And so length of quarters stays at 20 minutes?
Yep, that's again, that fits in with the philosophy of no material change for 2022. And the commission are very clear that it'll be 20-minute quarters. But again, that'll be something, game length will be something we keep a really close eye on.
And do you know the answer as to whether the pre-finals bye would return, or is that up for debate at the moment?
Well, that fits into Travis Auld and Marcus King's portfolio around fixturing, and they've got some challenges at the moment with uncertainty around particularly the Western Australian border situation. I think at this stage, we would look to return to the pre-finals bye, but we think we'll finalise the fixture in the first week of December, so we'll be able to give you a definitive answer then.
Terrific. Thanks a lot for your time this morning, Brad, and we'll pick up our conversations as we go.
Look forward to it, Jared. Thanks for your time.
Brad Scott, after yesterday's competition committee meeting and no rule changes for 2022, I presume that's popular, although I've seen a whole lot of, why didn't they do this or why didn't they do that? I've always thought it's a perverse conversation, and it is equally so today.